In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp.
And this is Dave Brenner.
Gentlemen, we are in a new year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you both.
Long time no hear from.
Long time no hear from. Well, we've done a few episodes. I did a couple of solo ones with a few EMS authors and whatnot, and I did one each with each of you. So, but this is, I think, the first time three of us have been able to get back together since just before, I think, Thanksgiving, a little bit before Thanksgiving.
Our dynamic trio.
How quickly you just dump us for the limelight, you know? You're co-hosts for years, and now you just like, I got an author, and you're not, you know.
Yeah, I got to move past you guys. I'm like, you know.
We can't hold you back.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm like the Kardashians. You know, if I start making it, I kick everybody else to the curb.
Only a free bird sings.
Right.
I got you.
Exactly. So
it doesn't reduce the pain, I want you to know.
Yeah. I want to encourage people to, of course, visit the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/EMS Office Hours. Please go ahead, if you enjoy the show, to subscribe on iTunes and leave a comment there or a like, because that does help us in the rankings at iTunes. And we are also on Stitcher now, which is the Android version for podcasting, so people can listen on their Android devices and tablets. You can go to actually, you can find us on Stitcher just by typing in keyword EMS or paramedic, but you can also go directly. I have a link where it's emsseo.com/Stitcher. It's STITCHER. And you can go there and you can follow us there and leave comments and all that good stuff as well. So hopefully everyone will go ahead and do that. And, of course, we're also on Twitter at EMS Safe. So you can find us everywhere.
We are findable.
Yeah, so
and,
we're very findable.
And even if you go into any of these journals, you'll occasionally see us written up.
Yeah, mentioned. Right, we got Big Shot mentioned in Gems in October, you know, which was nice.
I got Josh's picture in the post office.
That's true. That's true too.
Yes, that's a popular one. Bad angle.
And of course, yeah, and anybody, of course, if anybody can't find us for some reason and you absolutely have no idea how to find or subscribe, you can email me directly at contact@emsofficehours.com and I will personally send you any appropriate link you desire. So that's how dedicated and active and proactive I am about getting the show out there.
Yeah.
The end.
Okay, I'll go with that.
So, yeah, I thought would be kind of an interesting discussion of kind of the first show of the year, as I started seeing some threads on Facebook talking about using Narcan for cardiac arrest patients, and so I also started thinking a little bit about using Narcan in general for patients that we have. You know, that are overdose patients or patients who, or really should, you can actually say not overdose, but dosed patients. So I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about that and get your guys' opinion on it and you know, go from there. Of course, everyone in the thread on Facebook and other blog posts that I've read on this talk about how it's not, you know, not an effective drug for the cardiac arrest patient. You know, and of course, for years we've been using it, and a lot of protocols still say to use it for the cardiac arrest patient, you know, kind of, you know, trying to fix the underlying cause of the cardiac arrest type thing.
Right.
Sure.
It's the assumption, you know, that you don't know, it can't hurt you. And
you know,
you
find the young patient that you're not quite sure why they're in arrest. So you think, well, maybe they overdosed, you know, on heroin or some other type of opiate. So you give Narcan because it's not gonna hurt. Or the, you know, you're working up a patient, you're not quite sure why they're in arrest, but you find, you know, painkillers in the house, and you start thinking, well, maybe they overdosed on the painkiller, you know.
Right, but what effect is that going to have on the underlying problem you're trying to fix? Their level of consciousness has no effect on their heart rate.
It's gone now, right? There's no level of consciousness, zero.
Right. But even if you, I mean, it.
Well, part of the argument I think that I can agree with is that the underlying cause, when you start thinking of H's and T's, right,
mm-hmm.
is the hypoxia is what made them go into cardiac arrest. The drug made them overdose and get, you know, go into respiratory arrest, which then in turn made them go into cardiac arrest. So by ventilating them, you're correcting, you know, that ventilatory issue. You know, if you're ventilating them properly, but people still feel that, well, give the Narcan so that if you get return of resuscitation, you know, you correct that respiratory depression from the heroin or whatever.
Yeah.
So what are your guys take? Do you use it begrudgingly in an arrest because it's in a protocol? Are you using it because you've always used it? Do you use it just in case? You know, do you guys agree with it, disagree with it? Because I've also seen things where they talk about how Narcan even has some sort of a antiarrhythmic effect.
Wow.
I didn't know that. I would actually defer that to Dave, who is our resident cardiac expert, I would say.
Right. Let's push everything on Dave.
I would, because I'll be honest with you.
Talk about the smart stuff.
This day and age, when it comes to Narcan, I know that if you run out on the bus, you can go to Duane Reade and get some more. I mean, it's become such a benign drug that it's now in many places sold over the counter, you know, to worried parents.
What about we'll talk about that later. But what about the what was I seeing? I forget what I just saw that. I think it's in New York actually, where they're gonna have safe places for heroin addicts to go and shoot up, so that they overdose, there'll be people there monitoring them.
Oh, cool. Now I know where to go on my lunch break.
Kind of reminiscent of the Penny Lane song by the Beatles. A pretty nurse is selling poppies from a tray, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so what do you guys think about the arresting? Do you think it's something that – I mean, I think American Heart Association, right? Didn't they just come out with something for 2015?
They did. That I'm up on.
Where they talked about the use of Narcan, and that they say it doesn't – they say it has no effect on cardiac arrest patients.
No,
but they
kind of follow, that's not exactly what they say. They say there's no evidence that it has any effect.
Right. And then, but they kind of say, but use it anyway.
Well, what they said was most of this was written for the lay rescuer. They're believing that very possibly the lay rescuer may not be able to palpate even a carotid pulse. And we already know, we already know that there are plenty of healthcare providers who can miss a carotid pulse. So,
right. Sure. I have. Well, I'll be honest with you, I have. I've done it.
Actually,
I've done
without having the document in front of me, the Heart Association did some pretty good research into this, and this was almost 10 years ago, that the majority of people, both lay and professional, miss a carotid pulse, either sensing one when there is not one or missing it when they're in the presence of one.
Right.
And so they've really gone to the fail-safe mode of, if you're a lay rescuer, we feel the odds are better that you really won't be able to tell there is one, so we'll go to the basics. If you're not moving, not breathing, do CPR. In the professional landscape, it isn't much more sophisticated than that as well, I gotta say.
Well, that was kind of mentioned, Josh, in one of the threads I was looking at, where they talked about, well, what are you talking about, you know, pulsus arrest. You can't figure it out versus respiratory, deep respiratory arrest. You know, can't you check for a pulse? If you don't feel a pulse, they're in cardiac arrest. What's like the mystery? But like you just said, it's kind of geared towards, you know, the layperson who might have a harder time feeling for a carotid pulse.
But then again,
like Dave said, a lot of you know, providers have difficulty.
However,
I mean, I've had a time.
However,
you know, as paramedics, and certainly as not everybody's a paramedic, I get that. When you have the ability to use an EKG, and of course an EKG doesn't tell you that what looks like a rhythm is not PEA.
Right.
I think you have a little bit more help with
you
that.
Know. But let's fall back to the two.
But you also, as a paramedic or an EMT as well, you also know, okay, you know, if I'm looking at an AED, or I'm looking at the EKG monitor, and it looks like there's a rhythm, and I'm looking for a carotid pulse, and I don't feel one, you know, it might be that it's just difficult to feel it, or I'm not quite in the exact right place, or the
let
neck is a certain way, whatever.
Let me.
I can check a radial pulse. I can check a femoral pulse, and see, you know, feel it that way.
Let me just cut to the heart of the matter, Jim. All right,
I must.
Followers of the show know that I am not shy when it comes to this.
Okay.
First of all, as paramedics, we have more advanced equipment and we can put it on and actually be fooled into thinking that there's some sort of activity there, that when there is no activity there. When I'm talking about activity, the root of this whole exercise, and I can even throw this back at Dave, you know, what's the principal root? Why are we doing this? And, you know, you may not be following me, Dave. It's a lot of people.
Oh, I'm following you.
Okay. So what are we doing? It's cardiopulmonary or cerebropulmonary circulation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we're doing that. Not pulmonary, heart and brain, circulation. Keep the muscle alive. Keep brain tissue alive. We need circulation. So I put out there that if you're feeling a pulse and it's very weak and thready, or you're not sure, you're feeling for something, you see activity on your monitor, but you can't really tell, does it matter? Because you're not getting perfusion. So what's the, at that point in time, who cares?
So the question is,
you need a perfusing. You need perfusion in order for this whole thing to work.
Yes, you do.
So if it's inadequate that you can't tell, are you getting perfusion? And I would venture to say no, you're not. So CPR is in order.
CPR is in order. CPR is in order, and what we need to do for these type of arrests is provide good oxygenation, good ventilation, good oxygenation. How many times, and I'm going to tell you that I can tell you it's been many times for me, because, you know, my system allows a little bit of my going to the scene with very limited equipment and as a volunteer. I'll take a BEM, and I'll ventilate a person who is apneic and blue, and not only pink them up, but wake them up without any naloxone. I'll wake them up because I blew off their carbon dioxide. I corrected their respiratory depression. They still have the depression, but I corrected it, you know, manually. And they woke up. And then when I stop, they go back to sleep. But we can wake them up. So the key to this is good ventilation, not naloxone.
You're talking in overdose scenarios.
Yeah.
Right. Now, because you're not going to wake somebody up and necessarily pink somebody up who's there for cardiac arrest for.
But if they're in cardiac arrest from a heroin overdose, the response is the same. You got to do the same stuff. You got to get rid of the consequences of respiratory depression, which is done with good ventilation. If we're concerned, hey, we got a pulse back, but now we need to get them breathing, by that time, that would be a good thing to do. But I don't think we need to, I don't think that the Narcan itself is going to make them breathe while they're hypoperfusing. That doesn't make any sense at all to me. There's no evidence that it does. And I need to say this over the course of things. This sense, and I had that sense for many years, that naloxone was benign. It's not benign. It's not
okay. Benign.
It has consequences. And not everybody who's taking an opium derivative is simply taking an opium derivative. If they're taking opium with crack, if they're taking opium with cocaine, all right? And we reverse the naloxone. And even if we just reverse, I'm sorry, not the naloxone, the opium, the heroin. If we simply reverse the heroin, you end up with a catecholamine storm. And if they have pre-existing cardiac conditions, that could be consequential.
Okay.
So but I like, you're talking I like about, reversal, but I like my, reversal in moderation.
So you're talking about Narcan not being benign when there's an underlying medical condition. You know, when we're using the word benign. Well, but I.
How about flash edema? Have you seen that?
Yes, I've heard of that as well. I've never seen it, but I have heard giving somebody the Narcan, then they end up going to flash edema.
And that probably will bring us to a different discussion on how much Narcan to give, or whether to give it at all to some people.
Yeah, well, since we're kind of going into that, I mean, you know, I guess on the cardiac arrest end of it, you know, most people agree that it doesn't really have an effect.
Right.
Cardiac arrest and but of course people still have to follow their protocols and still do it because, you know, it's what their medical director or their guidelines say to do in certain instances of cardiac arrest. So we'll leave that there, I guess. I mean, I think we are in agreement that it's not really an effective use in a cardiac arrest. And it's funny because it's like it is, I still think – just one last thought on that is it's the type of thing that people will do because they run out of shit to do. You're on a call, you run out of epi, you know, you've given epi, you've given lidocaine, or you've given amiodarone or vasopressin or whatever it is, and now you're sitting around, you know, waiting, and, you know, someone, well, let's give Narcan, you know, because it's just something else to do while you're sitting around waiting. And I think that happens a lot. I think even more so now because we've got a lot of places that do that focused, you know, pit crew type of CPR where the medic that is running the call doesn't really do a whole hell of a lot. You know, everybody else is doing compressions and everything. They're monitoring the EKG. They're monitoring the compressions getting done and the end tidal and all that good stuff. And they start feeling like nothing else I can do. I'm just sitting here waiting for the next cycle to check for, you know, a pulse and check for a shockable rhythm. But in the meantime, I think what I'll do, I'll give Narcan so it looks like I'm doing something.
So you're saying that Narcan is like the French fries of the fast food world.
Sure, right. Would you like an apple pie with that?
It's the add-on.
Right, it's the apple pie.
No, I just want a burger.
Right. I might even call this episode that the apple pie of CPR, you know. Narcan. The apple pie of CPR.
You know. And the other thing that I was – that sort of, you know, tangential, but, you know, the one thing that you need when you're giving drugs is perfusion. If you just push drugs into a vein or, you know, anywhere else for that matter and you don't have perfusion, you get a pocket of concentration of drugs that don't do anything.
Yeah. Right.
And so when you wake them up, it'll kick in.
Yeah. And I want to kind of go into that, Dave, as well, is this is something that is always been, I mean, even years ago as a young, you know.
Oh, I know where we're going.
Excited.
Paramedic. Well, when you get the overdose patient, the heroin overdose patient. I mean, back when I first started, it was you're giving 2 milligrams of
life,
you know, yeah, and patient wakes up, and oftentimes they're a little agitated. You know, let you woke them up. Occasionally they'll vomit, you know, or become even more agitated. And then, of course, now over the years, the dosages have gone down. So now you're giving 0.4, you know, milligrams at a time, giving it IM, giving it IN, you know, as well. And you get also the issue of, like, where you get the patient that is high, but they're breathing fine, but people feel the need they have to give Narcan to wake
well,
them up.
Well, you know, if you want to touch upon, if you want to touch
oh,
upon
yes,
old,
a whole other
oh, thing. There you go. You want to touch upon old school? What did you do to the triage nurse that gave you a hard time? Hmm. You know.
Yeah, that's one of those things you hear quite often. You know, oh, I'm going to wait till we get to the hospital, I'm going to give the full two milligrams, so the patient wakes
as
up
as you're walking in.
So, yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've never done that. You know, I know a lot of people have said that they've done it or they've seen other people.
To be honest,
I've
never even seen it done.
You know,
a lot of people
yeah,
talk about
it,
but
you get people, but you do have people who
hear
who
this
might,
stuff and might actually but, do it.
Yeah, or they do, or like Dave had just said, people will do it in the ambulance because they're pissed off. They were, you know, woken up at some time in the morning for this overdose, and you know, give them the entire, you know, 2 milligrams, you know, to take the high away.
Well, you know, I mean, come on, you again, you know, we're talking back when it was a little more wild and woolly on the streets, so to speak. But I mean. Tell me that you haven't had a discussion with somebody who was sort of nodding off in your bus, you know, stay awake or I'm going to give you.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, not exactly.
Well, I mean, listen, but... I recently had a patient and she was, you know, she was on heroin. She was doing the nod and, you know, and I kept telling her, stay awake. You got to, you know, stay awake, you know, to the point where I said, you know, if you don't stay awake, if you fall asleep, then I might have to give you something to make you stay awake, you know. And I think she kind of got the hint of what I was saying,
right.
You know. But even then, even if they're not awake, you still have to say, okay, but are they breathing?
Absolutely.
You know, what am I giving this drug for? If they're breathing, okay, so they fell asleep. They're high on heroin. Right. Let them sleep. Who cares? I could care less if they're sleeping. If their vital signs are stable and all, let them sleep.
I would almost prefer that some of them
yeah.
stay asleep.
Quite
yes,
frankly,
exactly.
They're easier to deal with, aren't they? You're not going to get
yes.
swung at. You're not going to get, you know, whatever's
yeah.
going on.
But you'll get partners who will say to you, or even nurses and doctors, when you bring a patient like that in, say, did you give any Narcan? And you're like, no. And look at you like, what? How did you not give Narcan? Yeah, because I didn't want to fight with somebody in the back of the ambulance. They were, you know, they weren't hypoxic. They're breathing fine. They've got, you know, good vital signs, good,
right.
you know, oxygen saturation. What am I giving them Narcan for? To piss them off and to make an issue where there wasn't one a minute
they
ago?
They told me they had an allergy to Narcan. That's why I didn't.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've had patients that have been – who have overdosed and it was an unknown, you know, overdose but no evidence of any kind of opiate stuff why didn't you give Narcan? You never know what it could have been. And then we go back to stuff like Dave said, where you can have issues where you can cause other problems by giving it, you know, like the pulmonary edema thing where you get that flash pulmonary edema. You know, Dave, do you know is there an underlying condition the patient has that causes that?
Well, yeah, if they have previous existing heart problems, if they're, you know, like chronic
even
hypertension.
Like, what I've heard is like a younger person that you wouldn't expect it. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's probably true.
And, you know, the other question that I have, you know, not that this isn't, you know, a researched occurrence that does happen, but I really wonder how often it really does happen, you know, what percentage of the population, you know, are going to have a reaction to it? You know, I mean, how often does flash edema happen from Narcan administration?
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've read things where people have said, you know, that they've experienced that. I've actually even just before the show, looking at some of the other commentary on this, and you know, going back to like 2008, actually, you know, people had said, "Oh, I've seen this."
Yeah, but we're in an industry that tends to make a point, tends to point out the zebras, you know, and ignore the horses.
I can kind of see that. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not trying to dismiss that as a problem or a concern. I'm just saying, you know, out of 10,000 patients that have to get Narcan, that's sort of why I say, you know, we're talking about a relatively benign drug, because it's really talked about in a benign way. Not that it can't be misused, Dave. Not that, you know, if you're doing something other than trying to reverse respiratory depression, which is really what
all
you should be doing with Narcan. Therefore, you should be giving the smallest amount you need in increments until you achieve the desired effect.
Right, not to wake them up all the way, right. Just so you're – yeah, exactly. And I think some providers might not be aware of that or might not think that far down. You know, it's like, well, I have to keep giving them 0.4 until they wake back up. No, you can give it to them until they – you know, till they're not blue anymore and they're breathing on their own and
a lot of good stuff. We have terrific equipment. We have SpO2. We have side stream. You know, you bring the carbon dioxide down to normal. You bring the oxygen
yes.
up to over 94. I'm a happy guy. Let them sleep.
Right.
I don't want to fight
exactly.
with them. I've heard, although I haven't seen it, I've heard of ERs where they get people like this, especially people they've seen before who become violent or combative. They put them on naloxone drips. Just enough to keep them breathing, not enough to allow them to go into.
Yeah, I mean, and you think about going to the emergency room. Really, they're better off just letting them sleep it off, you know, instead of waking them up. And now you've got somebody you've got to really babysit who does now. They don't want to be in the hospital. They want out of the hospital. They want to sign themselves out. I mean, I've had issues where I've given people enough Narcan where they wake up. I go to the hospital, get triage. I'm not even doing my paperwork yet, and I see them walking out the door.
Right.
You know, because they walk out of the ER.
And maybe that's a strategy that some of the ER folks use to keep their beds yeah. open, to keep their workload a little lower.
Right.
There is the other consideration that some of the people with opium derivative overdoses are actually on pain medication that they may have overdosed on. And if we completely reverse that, we may bring them into a state of significant pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, the true accidental overdoses, which can happen. I mean, if you're in excruciating pain, you're not making good decisions. You take something like this, and then you make even worse decisions.
Yeah, I've had a few patients like that who did accidental overdoses on their pain meds, and you know, you bring them, you know, you wake them back up, you know, with the Narcan and whatever. But I've also seen a couple of write-ups where, you know, you had a story where the patient was on pain medication and they were unresponsive and all, and they gave them the Narcan and reversed the pain med, but they still remained unresponsive because they were either septic, you know, or something else was going on, and that was the real reason why. But so now
it makes other things clear.
Right, exactly. And now, but now you've taken away that you know, the pain relief that they had.
The opium filter.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Or the issue, I forget what I think it was Peter Canning's site where I read where he described an issue where he gave Narcan to somebody, they woke right up, and then when they got to the ER, they went out again, and he thought the Narcan was what, you know, fixed it, and it really turned out the person was having a bleed. So they had a moment of lucidity and went.
I'm going to tell you that word. That was a good word.
Yeah, that I would have to look that one up. You know, so yeah, so,
so
well,
in essence,
and again,
I think
the three of us
that was masking anything. It was the act that was it was the act of actually giving it that masked the
two
real
ml
underlying,
bolus.
right,
yeah,
masked the underlying condition.
Yeah. And I think the three of us are pretty much in agreement on both of these issues with the Narcan, but I can understand, you know, sometimes why people feel that way. I think sometimes you end up giving more than you would, your judgment might tell you to give, or what more than what would bring the patient back to a breathing state, because you feel when you go to a hospital and they ask you if you've given it, you know, and you say no, or you say, well, I just gave him enough to keep him breathing, they look at you as if, you know, you did something wrong, you know. Because that's their, you know, that's what they would do, or that's what they're used to doing, and then they look at you as if you did something incorrect.
You know,
and then, so rather than having that kind of those eyeballs looking at you like you did something wrong when you get to the hospital, it's like, what do you care? I'll just, you know, this is a, you know, I'll give this guy as much Narcan as he needs so that I'm not judged as a poor provider by the nurses and doctors.
You know what's interesting, a little offshoot of this conversation, when we talk about the consequences of giving Narcan, and we have whatever background we have, which is fairly decent, now that they have public access Narcan, this is what I believe. Can we talk about this, Jim, or...
Yeah, that's fine.
Just a little side thought on this.
A little sidebar.
This is
fine.
What I think. First of all, there are going to be people who say, "My, you know, my buddy's got this. I can do whatever the hell I want." And their buddy is also a drug addict, or their buddy is not a drug addict, but not a paramedic, and maybe incapable of making those decisions. Number two, these people may end up with an opium-based narcosis. They're sleeping, and their buddies are going to give them one or two doses, full doses of Narcan, because they don't know what to do. And they will be inducing all the side effects that we are concerned about, that they have no knowledge of. You know, they're going to see a person, oh, he's asleep, I'm having a hard time waking up. Oh, yeah, he's breathing, but I'm going to give him the Narcan because, you know, really, how much training have they had? Have they gone through 15 scenarios when they went for their original training online? No. No, they didn't. And they're giving it IM, they're giving it nasal. And they may, you know, I'm just suspicious.
Or both.
I think we may be finding out that there is a downside to this, that this may actually increase the number of deleterious effects from opium derivative overdoses. And I also believe it will delay the calling of 911. People are going to give it.
Oh, I agree with that. And I think this is something I think that EMS professionals should be sort of more well versed in is some of the side effects and things of the Narcan, because when you have these people giving it like that, you're going to start seeing some of those side effects from it. You know what I mean? So you're going to get there, and yeah, now the overdose is done, but now something else is going on, and you're like, well, why the hell is this happening?
And sometimes,
well, you know, I gotta without. I know we're deviating a little bit here, but going back to your statement about the public access Narcan and the idea of deleterious effects, let's just ground ourselves and keep in mind why this public access has happened in the first time. It's not exactly without roots, and it's not exactly without some level of proven beneficial effects. We're in an epidemic of pain management right now. We're not, you know, it's sort of this new world of pain management where we're recognizing the damage it's doing, but also recognizing in every hospital environment there is that a patient has the right to pain management. And as a matter of fact, that it therapeutically, it's very important in the healing process. So, you know, we have this situation where more people are being managed directly for pain, more aggressively for pain. You're going to have more cases where people are overdosing. This is a drug that is very effective in that narrow window, which is expanding. You know, there's got to be that happy, you know, and I'm not sure that we're finding it, but there has to be that happy medium where, you know, accidents will happen. Here's a tool to reverse that accident. and we'll have to take the collateral damage of people who are on the outliers of conditions where it has negative effects, and have to accept those as problems. I mean,
Josh,
where do you want to end up?
I'm not saying that this is not a well intentioned, but I also believe that no good deed goes unpunished. And you're saying outliers, and I'm not convinced that there won't be more harm than good.
Yeah. So what you're saying, let me rephrase that, Dave. What you're saying is that for the number of people who are dying because of accidental overdose, which is mushrooming in this country,
right,
that we're actually going to have more people that are going to get the Narcan from a layperson, where it's going to cause negative effects.
No. There may be some negative effects from that. What I think
that's what I'm saying.
They're going to have a false sense of security. People are going to have a false sense of security. You know what? Sometimes people don't do heroin alone, although it certainly can be done alone. The people do them in groups. We get groups of people who do doing that. Oh yeah, I got a dose of Narcan here, and I got four people who overdosed. I'm the designated driver, so I'm the designated Narcan guy. So and my designated Narcan guy has to be sophisticated enough to do all the right things. You may in fact find an uptick in the number of consequential heroin or opium derivative consequences.
Because you believe they have a safety net that they don't actually have, or they will believe
correct.
They have a safety net that they actually don't have.
That's what I'm saying.
I'll challenge you. I sort of feel
we'll
that's
out.
A little bit of a stress. Yeah, absolutely. We'll find out. But I think that, you know, it's, to draw another corollary, you know, when you get some conspiracy theorists out there and say that these people, you know, again, it's, I don't think we're dealing with the majority of cases of people that are suddenly going to get together and have, you know, heroin parties with a designated driver.
I hope not.
And to be honest with you, for the majority of the real hardcore drug users that I've had contact with, you know, in the field, they're not unsophisticated people. You know, they know how to, you know, procure, purify, you know, administer, you know, which is all, if you think about what, you know, you had to, what you've taught paramedics and how to give a shot, these people are, you know, fairly advanced in some skills.
Yeah.
So I'm just,
access.
You know, they might, there might be those cases, but I would say for every one of those cases where the guy's sitting there and saying, I'm the designated driver and I have one administrative kit of a Narcan for four people, there's going to be people who say, okay, everybody has their two kits. You're all ready. Let's go to it.
Oh, yeah. No. No. Sorry. No.
All right.
No.
Well, guys, when we ended there, I don't want to, you know, I think we're pretty much in agreement to, you know, to what we've been talking about, which is always nice to be in agreement when we're talking.
We're going to come back in a year on this one.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I do want to mention a great EMS mug I saw on Facebook, and it's also a T-shirt. If anybody wants it, you can go on Facebook to find it. It says, it cannot be inherited, nor can it ever be purchased. I have earned it with my blood, sweat, and tears. I own it forever. The title, paramedic.
Oh, pretty cool.
So if anybody wants that, you can go and get it. It kills me
or
because
in the case
it's
of the
like
state, it's 3 years.
Yeah.
Wait. I have to say this though. One of the students, I won't tell you where or when, posted online. Oh, it's so cool. It's so cool. They said, I'm in being a paramedic student is like riding a bicycle, except the bicycle is on fire, you're on fire, and you're in hell.
Well, these mugs and T-shirts kill me with their, you know, commentary.
Yeah, it's only because you didn't think of it first. Come on, be honest.
No, well, it does because this person's got, you know, 83 shares and 263 likes for this stupid mug, and it just kills me, you know, that they're selling it.
Well, shares and likes don't actually get money
for real money. You know, I mean, honestly.
Listen, we both have websites. We both talk about conversions. We both talk about sales. You know, I know firsthand what you're talking about. And I remember back in the day when, you know, they said, offer T-shirts.
Well, what kills me about that, I see it and then I'm like, you know what, 263 likes and shares and whatever for a stupid mug with a ridiculous saying on it. But if you get somebody that posts something educational about EMS, you get, you know, a handful of shares and likes. But you put a stupid mug up there and everybody wants it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, you know, you put a cat with lasers riding, you know, Roomba, and it's going to get a couple of million.
A cat with lasers riding a miniature ambulance and put that on my Facebook.
There you go. You'll probably get more hits doing that.
Right. All right. Well, guys, when we end it there, you got any more comments you want to make on the topic of the Narcan use? Any kind of closing arguments or commentary? I think we've all pretty much set our piece.
I think it's working out. Yep.
I agree.
Just remember, you don't need Narcan to open an oxygen tank. You need a want new oxygen wrench. That's at otwrench.com.
Otwrench.com. You need to get the oxygen wrench that opens up the Narcan vial.
Well, you could do that, actually. You know, if you give it a good shot. Well, we don't have the ampules anymore, right? They're all the Bristol-Jets.
I guess that depends on how I don't know.
No.
You got ampules still?
No, we don't, but they're being sold.
Yeah, it's from where you are, different stuff, you know.
And vials and ampules.
Different way it comes. Yeah.
I don't think ampules are being sold anymore. I mean, we're not even getting Epi in ampules, you know, the high-dose Epi.
High dose. You mean the 1 to 1,000?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry.
It's all right.
Versus the 1 to 10,000. The low dose. The cardiac epi.
Yes. All right. All right, guys. That's it. Any listeners you want to get in contact with us, you want to make a comment or a suggestion for our show in the future, please send it to us. The email is contact@EMSOfficeHours.com, or, of course, you can feel free to leave a comment here in the blog, in the show notes, or on Facebook. As I mentioned earlier, it's facebook.com/EMSOfficeHours. All right, guys, that's it. Until next time, I am Jim Hoffman.
I'm Josh Knapp.
And I'm Dave Brenner.
All right. Stay safe, guys.